So I've been swimming in the sea still. Beautiful.
Have you?
Yeah, good.
Are you beach ready? I mean, have you got what they call a beach body?
I look a bit like a whale, I think, when I go in.
Oh, more like a beached body than that.
Yeah, Greenpeace are coming to throw me back in.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 247 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast.
It was going so well. Don't
hesitate. What do I say then? I say my name. My name is Nick Page. And there is Moby Joe.
Yeah, I am a bit. Oh, dear. I have let myself go a bit, it has to be said.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, it's your holiday, wasn't it? You have to sort of let yourself go on your holiday.
Well, I'll tell you what happens. It all started to go wrong in March when I came back from seeing my brother. And normally when I come back after a holiday, I go, all right, okay, it's time to lose the weight, because you always put on weight on holiday. But you know, I just kept putting it on. I think I had, you know, this is all grief. I eat my feelings, as you know. So, you know, this is right. What you're witnessing here. And I'm glad you can't see this, listeners. Unfortunately, Nick can. this is grief belly compounded with other stuff. But do you know what? I feel so good after the last holiday. I'm addressing it now. So it's on the, I hope it's on the wane. We'll see.
I'm sure it's fine. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, how have you been?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Do you know, I have a website for my celebrancy, and, you know, there's also stuff about the podcast on there. And every now and then families will say, oh, we listened to your podcast. Anyway, someone listened to it and said, your podcast is absolutely brilliant. And the guy you do it with, and I quite like that they didn't know your name. That made me feel special for a moment. He said, the guy, he sounds just like, and I went, Chris Packham? They went, yes.
Yeah, so, there we go.
So that was fun. I'm home alone this week because my daughter, who is retraining as horticulturist, has finished her exams, and Rachel and her currently languishing in the new Forest of Dean. So they're having a little jolly there, which is nice for them. Lonely for me. Well, that does mean I get to watch all the programmes that Rachel doesn't like, so that's quite good. Oh, and Happy New Year. I mean, we had Christmas last week, and it was also the end of my financial year and the start of a new year. And as always, no one is ever interested in that except me. But it's always a moment that I mark sort of with gratitude, assuming the bills have all been paid and things like that, which they have just.
Yeah, but we don't have our new year. We have established this, haven't we? We have our new year on March 25th.
Oh, in March. Oh, yeah. And rightly so, because that is the correct time of year.
And we have our Mid-Faith Crisis Christmas on June 25th.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I don't know what this is. This is just your financial new year.
This is just a moment of gratitude and somehow worry.
So, well, join us, listeners, in celebrating Joe's financial new year, wishing him a happy financial new year, sending him a card, maybe.
Well, it needs to be better.
Yeah.
Oh. It turns out I took too much time off last year.
Yeah,
especially around my mum's passing, and of course the anniversary of that is coming up next week as well. So,
well, yeah. So sometimes you don't have an option about that.
No, you don't really. I know, but there we go. So yeah, but really, I suppose all is relatively well, I think. So thank you. Good. How about you? What's going on?
Yeah. Last week I went to an undercover Catholic Mass in an old abbey,
and it's undercover because there was a roof.
Well, no, undercover, secret, in the dark.
In the dark.
Yeah, it's mainly in the dark. Yeah.
Is this like those restaurants you go to and you sit in pitch black and have a date with someone and you don't know what's going on and who they are?
Well, funnily enough, we did have soup. Not much soup, but anyway, no, it's a thing called Secret Bird, and as usual, it's one of my wife's bookings, and it was done to celebrate, I think, the 500th anniversary of a composer called William Byrd. B-Y-R-D. I'll put a link in the show notes. Who
don't bother. No one will look at it.
Was a composer for Elizabeth I, but was actually a secret Catholic. So they staged it as like a sort of undercover, underground Catholic mass, as would have happened in the time of Elizabeth, and had a group of five singers and five instrumentalists play his music. It was very evocative and rather lovely.
You do go to some extraordinary things, don't you?
Well, again, it's Claire, really. If it were me, I would sit downstairs drinking. So she's quite good for me like that. So did that, and then been on the canals again.
Of course you have. Yeah, how was that?
It was lovely, yeah. It was very nice. Good weather, good company, just very relaxing.
Oh, yeah, you went with your real friends. You've never taken me on the canal.
I'm not taking you in a barge because you're too tall, for one thing.
It's true.
And also, I'd be...
It would sink. Up. Why don't you just say it?
No, I wasn't even going to go there. I'm thinking more sort of cooped up in a very small, confined space with you, but like being in a caravan with you.
You're right. It wouldn't be good.
I mean, I have spent time in a butler's chalet with you, and that was traumatic enough.
Oh, yeah.
It was good. I did nearly muller a complete a fisherman's catch net, because they were fishing all along the bank where we were trying to park.
Oh.
And so I just sort of parked in, and I nearly reversed and, inadvertently, I don't know whether I would have freed the fish or mashed them up, actually.
Gosh.
If I'd freed them, I wouldn't feel bad about it. But he was a bit irate. But anyway, apart from that, it was nice. Oh, and then the night before last, we went to a brush party.
A what?
So it's a painting party.
Okay.
You go and you basically sort of paint by numbers. And it was in a pub.
Okay.
I think so. We went there, and that was fun.
So this isn't like a 5-year-old's party.
No, it was well, a lot of women and me. Fundamentally, drinking beer and painting, copying a painting. It was quite fun. That there's something lovely about just picking up a brush and painting.
Yeah,
and not caring.
I'm sure there
it is.
Yeah.
So mindful and lovely, and I really ought to do it more often.
Okay,
so that was nice.
Sounds great.
So we went to one of those.
Oh, that's amazing.
So should we get on?
Shall we? Yeah, come on. Well, first up, thanks to Kevin, who sent in a link to the BBC story that was covering this church. It's Monk's Chapel near Chippenham that holds a Christmas service in June every year now since the pandemic.
Oh, fantastic.
Because they had to cancel it because of the pandemic, and the villagers, you know, were rioting, presumably. So they had to start doing one in the summer. And now it's a thing, a summer thing. So there you go. We're not the only ones. And then that lovely Chris Scott wrote in. He said this: I've been listening to the Christmas special and thought that the quotation from Dean Inger is that I use in the book. I mean, I don't know. Is he just trying to plug the book again?
Dean Inge? Or Ing?
Ing. Anyway, Dean Inge, which it Dean most Inge. Definitely isn't pronounced. Yeah. He uses this quote in the book and he said it seems relevant. So here comes the quote. He says, "The incarnation and atonement are living facts still in operation." Strong start. I like that. "The incarnation and atonement are living facts still in operation. They are part of the eternal counsels of God. And whether they are enacted in the abyss of the divine nature or once for all in their fullness on the stage of history or in miniature, as it were, in your soul and mine, the process is the same. And the tremendous importance of those historical facts which our creeds affirm is due precisely to the fact that they are not unique and isolated portents, but the supreme manifestation of the grandest and most universal laws." Well, I understood some of that.
No, I think he's saying what we were saying. So they're not, I like that. That's not unique and isolated portents, but the supreme manifestation of the grandest and most universal laws. The highest reality, if you like. Yeah, like that.
Well, we've said many times death and resurrection are just, you know, part of the universe, aren't they? It's just you see it everywhere once you open your eyes. Yeah. So there we are.
There we go. Dean Inge in his Bampton lectures. Bampton's near me, actually. I go
Is
to
it?
Bampton most days, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dean Inge isn't still around because he delivered that in 1899, so.
Yeah, okay.
he won't be signing autograph copies of that quote.
I never said I was an original thinker. I get there eventually, even though somebody's clearly been articulating exactly the same thing 100 years ago.
No, it's good. So thank you, Chris, for sending that in. Did you think Chris will listen to this again? I don't know. Anyway, so, and then, well, let's just do one more email. This is from Samuel. It's quite long, so I'm gonna attempt to summarise this. He says, "Hi, you guys. Hope you had a good weekend, and thanks for another fun and interesting episode." So he's referring to last week.
Oh, okay. We have to check which one it was.
Exactly. Exactly.
Fun and interesting does not apply to all of them.
The second word you would not normally apply.
No, it's just, don't think it's much fun either.
So he says, "Hi, Joe and Nick." And then what he does is he summarises these four ways of thinking of God. And we have talked about these before. One as a super being. So God is like a being, like a big human being. He's like us, and he's mightier than us and can do more stuff and at a bigger level. And then two, God as a hyper being. And that's where God is like us, but beyond our comprehension. And that's where, you know, the apophatic tradition grows. God is like this, but he's not like this. He's right. More, you know.
So netty netty,
exactly. Netty, yes, netty. Not this. And then or three, God is the ground of being, and that's another way of thinking. So God is sort of being itself. And then four, God is like an event or a moment of being. So God is where love is where how it was described to me. To be honest, that's one of the ones I understand the least of those four. So God is a super being, God is a hyper being, God is grounded being, or God is a moment of being. And he says one way to understand and indeed experience the incarnation, I think, is God breaking through to smash the silos and open our eyes to a more unified, expansive, ever-shifting, mind-blowing and life-giving view of who or what God is. Yes, Jesus at times has super being powers, like he heals the sick, walks on water, turns water into wine. But he is simultaneously an ordinary and very human being. He gets thirsty, tired from walking and teaching. He has to become a refugee to avoid death. He struggles with his own fate and death. He struggles with his faith in God, i.e. the why have you forsaken me bit. And yes, Jesus is hyper being. Just when the disciples think they've figured out what he's about, he continues to shock and surprise them, to rebuke them for the smallness of their perspectives, refusing to accept a shameful death and execution to come to their Messiah, or their attempts to pin him down. Yes, the cosmic Christ is the ground of all being, as John so lavishly describes for us. Before Abraham was born, I am. I am instead of I was seems to point to a timeless source of being rather than a time-bound being. In him we live and move and have our being. Yes, the story of Jesus hinges crucially on events, his birth, his missional ministry, his death, his resurrection. And he tells us we will do greater things still as the realm of God becomes known to us. A wonderful plug for an evolutionary view of human history and direction of travel. So he is in it all, down to the personal, human, and the impersonal, atomic, at the smallest and largest scale. Our words will always fail us. The hyperbeing camp always has an important role to pull us back from definitiveness. But the incarnation tells us that God deeply cares about us, ever seeing, understanding, encountering, and living more of God. Well, I think that's about fried my brain for the next 48 hours. Warmly, Samuel. So that's lovely, isn't it? He's arguing for not having one view, but having this kind of multiple view. I think some people will warm to this and others will go, well, no, you just can't do that. But I like this because it's post-rational. It's not irrational. It's just saying that because God is so much more than our little heads can comprehend. Yeah, I really like that.
Well, I think it's very good. I think, you know, we'll perhaps put those sort of four typologies as Samuel describes them on the website so people can have a look at them, you know, because he describes them quite well. But I mean, because basically he's saying that the incarnation smashes all the categories.
Yes,
you know, that it mushes them all up or transcends them or whatever you want to do. And I think that's absolutely,
it's great.
Right, I think it's very profound, and lots to think about there.
It transcends them and is simultaneously all of them.
Yeah. And I think this pushes us back to how we think about God, because we're always going to need metaphor to think about God. And the metaphors, as we've said, are always partial.
Mm.
But, you know, they're necessary.
Mm.
And so in all those sort of ways of understanding God, I mean, as you get further away from the human, it gets harder, doesn't it, to sort of understand. Mm. You know, once you get onto the ground of being and the moment, the event.
Yeah, I know. I must admit, it sort of challenged me and sort of shows up a sort of slight innate hypocrisy in me, because I do very much gravitate towards God being itself, because then I can say God is everything.
Mm.
And yet, when I'm in trouble, what do? I don't pray to a kind of, you know, mystical force. I say, God, like you're a being, this person needs help, or I need help, or, you know, this person needs help. And it's really interesting, isn't it, that you can say I believe one thing, but when the chips are down, I sort of need God to be more than just an ephemeral force. I need to be God, a person that I can address and shout at and, you know, demand stuff from.
Which is exactly the point of the incarnation, isn't it?
I think so.
You know,
it's not that people
weren't shouting at God before that. I was doing some work on one of the Psalms today, and, you know, it's very accusative of God, and, you know, his vision of God is very much human, superhuman, the warrior kind of God.
Yeah.
But Christ comes, and the incarnation is about giving us a way of picturing God. You know, one way of doing that. And I think that's immensely valuable. When I think about God, I often think about paintings, even though I know we've talked at length about, you know, the inadequacy of paintings and the way that sometimes they've actually reinforced wrong sort of typologies of God, particularly the big beardy, muscly bloke, you know, the Jove kind of figure.
Yeah, that's right.
But I often think about paintings like Stanley Spencer's view of Christ, where he's very rotund, he's very big, he's a big jolly chap, really, in many respects. He's wonderful. Or I have a picture up behind my desk of a crucifix that I encountered many, many years ago in I think it was in Bamberg in Germany, in a little museum, and it's made of ivory, but it's all cracked, you know, so it looks broken, the whole thing looks shattered on the surface of it. And that's, again, one of the most profound ways I can picture God. We all need it.
It's fascinating how at different stages we relate to God in different ways.
Mm.
And sometimes I think in our enthusiasm we want to make all other ways wrong. Like the way we're thinking currently, that's the right way.
Yes.
Because we've thought about it and we've got it. But I think what's so great about Samuel's email is it sort of reminded us of, well, certainly how the Bible portrays God in all those ways. And therefore we could think of God that way.
And isn't this the constant challenge? We talk about it a fair bit, but the challenge is to keep moving on in your understanding and your perceptions of God, but not to look down on people who view it differently, or even the way you used to view it.
Exactly.
Or even the views of God that you, as you pointed out, you run to in times of trouble.
Yeah.
It's not a regression.
No.
You know, it's important to you, that picture. It's worth dwelling on. What are your images of God and why are they meaningful to you?
Mm. Brilliant. That's good. But let's finish the episode here, because that's good. That's yes. Really nice. Let's just stop now. We're on a roll. Samuel's nailed it with that email.
Yeah, but it hasn't been fun or interesting enough yet, John, in my opinion.
Okay. Well,
it's been very interesting, but not interesting enough, because I've got a high bar.
So what we said last week, and by we, I mean you, was that you wanted to explore a bit further. What do we mean by we experience God in nature? How do we do
that?
What do we mean by that? And you're now going to explain that very clearly.
No, I'm not. I think you are, because I'm going to grill you, because you're the big nature boy. So,
oh, like you're not.
Well, I'm not to the same extent.
You are a bit of a churchy boy, aren't you?
I'm a churchy boy. Yeah. I like to go in the old church. I mean, it's typified, isn't it, when we went on what I thought was a fascinating trip around some of the Sussex churches some time back. And we went to one, which is called Bottles, which is just wonderful little old church. And I loved the church, and you loved the swifts flying about above the church.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Yeah, couldn't wait to get out to watch them.
Not, I didn't love those, but, you know. So what I'm interested in, Joe, is, you know, often people will write in, our listeners will write in, and you will say, I encounter God in nature. That is my, I've realised more and more, you've been saying it more and more recently, this is my church, this is where I encounter God.
Mm.
And what I'd like to explore is how. It seems to me that there must be more than just going outside, even though that's not a bad thing, is it? That's quite good in itself, to go outside and get fresh air and all health and all that, and mindfulness and mental health and all that. But what is it that turns that into encountering God? Or is it really just what you enjoy doing and you're kind of spiritualizing it?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. That is a good question. Yeah, maybe a little bit of both, I wonder.
Right.
Because equally, I feel like you can encounter God in music. And definitely I know people who would say that is so.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, yeah, but you just love classical music. You just get off on that stuff. So of course you would say that. But in fairness to them, I don't think it is that. I think there is something truly transcendent about music. It doesn't have to be classical music. It could be Coldplay. It could be whatever music it is you listen to. It's something that, I don't know, it feels qualitatively different, other. Like you're connecting with something bigger than yourself in that moment. It's not just an appreciation of music, and it's not just an appreciation of nature. It's like somehow I'm being caught up in something. Is that?
Right.
I mean, this is going to sound woo-woo, isn't it? How can it not?
No, no, it's fine. It's everything you say sounds woo-woo. We're used to that now. Let me push it just that little bit then. Maybe it's that word you use, connecting.
Mm.
Okay, because I think a lot of people would go bird watching, for example, but would they think they were connecting with something bigger than themselves? I don't know. I guess some of them would, but you feel in that moment you're connecting to the creator?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. I think sometimes it can happen during really intimate conversations. I think sometimes you get that real sense, and you know, I have it with Rachel from time to time, where you just think there's something going on between us now that is very, very special and somehow different to the normal rigmarole of life. It's like there's a connection between us that is perhaps even not just a connection between us. Maybe it is a connection to the divine as well. We're suddenly, we're so open. We're so, I don't know, vulnerable together or whatever. I don't know. I can't, it's really hard to describe this, and I definitely can't do it without sounding woo-woo. But, you know, and not just with Rachel. I mean, I suppose the obvious example would be in a sexual relationship, perhaps for some people. Perhaps sometimes that can be a truly transcendent moment. But just with friends, sometimes there can be something in an evening. You might not feel it, but there can be times when you've enjoyed a meal together and you've drunk a glass of wine together and you're so kind of, I don't know, close to one. There's a presence that is other than you there. That's what I think sometimes.
Okay.
Not always, but sometimes.
So is it an openness to the presence of the Holy Spirit then in that case? Is that what we're talking about here? In those kind of encounters, is it that the fact that both you and Rachel are open to something divine, something greater than yourself, that's adding into that?
Yeah, but quite possibly. I mean, and I have to say, in the past, in my spirit, I've had it in, you know, worship services when we've been singing. I've had that. It's not just a kind of emotional tingle, I don't think. I think, you know, get those in other music, but I think it's more than that. I think it's the oneness of us together is transcendent. It's wonderful. It puts us in a place where we're experiencing together something other than just each other, I think. And so that's another place it can happen.
I wonder if it's also to do with what you're paying attention to, what you're thinking about. A lot of my younger colleagues would say, well, they experience the presence of God in times of worship, in you know,
yeah,
worship singing. I don't experienced that. I experienced a mixture of rage and despair.
All joking. But,
I don't.
But have you ever? I mean, out of all joking aside, have you ever experienced
it? Yes, I have.
It?
And yeah. Yes, and the truth is, of course, yes, you do still, if you're still open to it. And but I think maybe there it's clearer because everything you're focused on, all you're hearing, is about God.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. So it's more cut and dry.
And therefore, that's what I'm wondering, whether what makes that person who experiences a sense of the divine through classical music is that part of them is thinking about that.
Mm.
Part of them is thinking about God is involved in this, you know, and the same with you with with creation and nature. You're because you accept that God is the creator, you're kind of maybe able to make that connection, and it's a stronger experience for you.
Yeah, I think so. And a bit like going to church and not experiencing God, equally you can go in nature and not experience anything at all. And I think you're right. It's about what you're paying attention to in the moment. And I think the more one does pay attention to something, you know, focus in, the more likely some sort of otherness encounter is, really. Yeah.
So is there anything you do? Are there any practices that you take with you into these outdoor moments? You know, I know that, for example, you often go to the beach early and things like that.
Yeah, I do,
because you're strange like that. But yes. But is there, you know, is there any, are there any sort of practices that you do, prayers or spiritual practices?
Yes, I mean, yeah, there is a definite, there's a definite sense of, look, I want to, because if you're me with my personality, you're constantly thinking about stuff. You know, you're walking along, but you're not noticing the reflections of the sunlight on the water, and you're not noticing the birds flying by, and you're not noticing because I'm deep in my head thinking about the challenges of the day. So the practice I do is to intentionally stop that and to go, do you know what? Stop, Joe. Breathe. You're alive. Mm. This is a gift. You know, you might not have been, but here you are, alive. And that sort of, that evokes a little bit of gratitude. And then I stay with that and just go, just take a look at this.
Yeah.
I mean, really open your eyes to the colour. And it's interesting. I was watching a programme where an artist was getting people to paint a scene. And the first thing he said to do is, please, will you just all close your eyes? The implication being you haven't seen this yet. And then he let them close their eyes for a good 30 seconds or so. He said, right, now open your eyes and really see it.
Yeah.
I thought it was really lovely, lovely. I mean, he wasn't doing a spiritual practice. He was doing an artistic practice. You could argue they're the same thing. I know. But, the point is, I think that is a really lovely thing. And sometimes just to close your eyes and, you know, take a few deep breaths and then open them enables you to really see what's happening before you. And that is a very worshipful experience for me.
So do you think you've heard God? I know that's a complicated phrase nowadays.
Yeah.
But do you think you've heard God through these encounters? Do you hear God speak to you?
Yeah, I think sometimes I have. Yeah. I mean, it's not a daily experience by any stretch of the imagination. Once or twice a year, let's get it clear. But yeah, I definitely do think I've connected to something. And it's like God outside and God as being and God as the ground of being and God, I'm connecting with myself and something inside of me whilst also seeing everything that is around me.
Hmm. I had a moment like that the other day. I think I said last week about going out on side, you know, on the verge in the industrial estate and sort of looking at the flowers.
Yeah.
And, you know, finding all these wildflower species that were there. And as listeners will know, I've not been in tip-top form over the last few weeks. And one of the plants I discovered there was a little purple plant, and it's called Heal All.
Oh, is it?
As in H-E-A-L, you know.
Oh, I don't know that.
No, it's a little wildflower. I wouldn't even have noticed it were I not making it a kind of attempt to map the plants that were there.
Yeah.
And there was just something in that name. It's still making me slightly emotional to talk about it, to kind of think that's a promise for me.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
That's something I need to hear. So you can say, well, it's just coincidence or blah, 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 but it's paying attention to the currents of what's happening. You know,
my point is that is real. You actually experience something then. And yeah, people try and explain it. It's just a psychological phenomena. It's a reaction to colour and sensory perception. Well, those things may be true as well, but actually something very personal was happening in that space between you and the plant. And I think that's the God dimension. I really do. Yeah.
Yeah. So have there been times when, you know, you talked about nature as your church kind of thing. Have there been times when it's more consciously being combined? In other words, you know, do you attend like outdoor services and things like that? Are they part of your practice?
I have attended a couple of church outsides, church in the wild type things. I'm being honest, I was slightly disappointed with them. I don't know whether I expected a deeper connection and didn't get it. I suppose like going to church, sometimes you're really hopeful you're going to have a real big encounter and you come away slightly disappointed. So that happens. But I love what one church are doing in Brighton, and I certainly intend to get more involved with that. But they follow the seasons. So they have a feast every solstice and half solstice, and and they cook seasonal food, and they really try and follow the seasons. And I think that's a lovely, lovely and wonderful thing to do. And we've tried to incorporate little things. So, you know, the summer solstice, we were up at Cissbury Ring, which is the highest point around here, and we watched the sunset and we said a few prayers and we did things like that. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't know there was any great profound encounter perhaps like we'd all hoped would happen on a summer solstice, but but it felt right to do it and good to do it and to note that season, because somehow God's in it.
Were you hoping for fairies to appear or something? What were you looking for?
I don't know. I just thought after we sacrificed that goat that, you know, something, something more spiritual would happen.
Yeah. Well, it certainly happened to the goat.
Slash barbecued.
I have had moments recently. Like you say, I'm more of a kind of church, but in other words, I'd like the service. It's a traditional service much more nowadays than an old church, and that sense of history and time, that's really what does it for me. But I've had moments recently where going, spending time in tiny churches with, it has to be said, very small congregations, but on days where they've left the door open. And so you get a combination of church service and bird song outside in the churchyard. In these little country churches.
Yeah.
And I think that's just glorious. I would encourage churches, if you've got churchyards, to leave your doors open more often and let the sound come in. And maybe even within the service, stop and just listen to the world. I think that would be a great thing to do.
Yeah, it would. And these people that do sort of singing with nightingales and things. And one of our listeners, John Bilbra, or Wilderthorne is his name, and it's really worth checking him out. And he does these gigs all over the place in wild spaces.
Oh wow!
And it's a really, again, I'm going to go to one actually next month. But there, he's sort of, you know, by taking his music out of a studio and putting it in a barn in the middle of nowhere or in an open field, or it's just something so wonderful about that. Yeah, do look him up, Wilderthorne, on YouTube.
Because I think increasingly I'm coming to believe in the concept of a spirit of place. Every place has a kind of spirit to it. You might call it an atmosphere, you might call it a sense, you might call it a unique way of connecting with the being that made it. And so I think, you know, what we're trying to do is, I suppose, get in touch with the Holy Spirit of place. You know, we're trying to get in touch with some element of the divine in that, really.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you for letting me grill you.
I'm not sure I was expecting that. Yeah, it's been a bit piffly, hasn't it?
A bit what?
Whiffly piffly. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, I thought you said pithily, and I don't think it's been pithy.
No, it hasn't been pithy.
And there's been no pith. I don't think it's been particularly whiffly for you. I think it's been fine.
But
I'm interested to hear from our listeners what places are holy for you. What's sacred ground for you?
Yes, great question. Yes,
is it the concert hall? Is it talking with friends? Is it church? Is it worship times? You know, is it quiet time? Is it the great outdoors? Is it a favourite chair? Let us know what your sacred places are, what your holy ground is.
Yeah. Is it doing what I did this morning, which is walk right out on the foreshore because it's spring tide and just watching the tide come in? Where do you find it? Don't forget to set your email machine to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. That would be good.
And if it is interesting old churches, send loads of them in because he does love that kind of thing. He loves it.
Please don't bother if that's your connection.
Yes, and anyway, thank you to everyone who does contribute. That's always really grateful. Thank you to those who've contributed to this episode. Thank you to all of you for listening. Thanks to those who support the podcast. That's wonderful as well. And if you wanted to find out more about how you do that, you can find that on the website, which is midfaithcrisis.org.
Yeah.
And we thought we'd end with a poem, a hymn. I don't know what you'd call this.
I don't know. Well, I suppose traditionally a poem, but this is Wild Geese by the fabulous Mary Oliver. It goes like this. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you, like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things.